I can make promises from today to tomorrow, but anyway, I tell you something interesting. First, let's begin. Today is Monday, March 27th, 2017, and the summer is rapidly approaching us in Israel. Friday night, I davened at an early minyan, and the person running it, and it was Tate de Sastre. He announced that say Kiddush before sunset, or 12 minutes before, 18, whatever. And on the other hand, he had a rabbi speak, and it was impossible to say Kiddush before sunset. So I wondered, I often see in the Torah tidbits, it also says, say Kiddush before sunset. What the heck are they talking about? Where does this come from? You don't have to be a great Talmud Chacham to understand that if you're Makabel Shabbos early or Yom Tov early, you can make Kiddush early. There's Kiddushat Hayom. Pesach is a different story. Pesach, there's a limud b'layla hazeh. So you can be Makabel Pesach early, Kiddushat Malacha, but you can't make Kiddush, you can't do the Seder. Okay. Yeah, so that's the Ashkenazim are stuck with that. The Sfadim don't have that problem. Eidat HaMizrach don't have that problem. Shevesh HaBatot Taminot Tiyena, so there's a minhag not lekabel shvuot early. All right. I checked it out. This concept of saying Kiddush before, because you're not allowed to start eating when the chiyuv becomes for Kriyat Shema Erev, davening Kriyat Shema Erev, and said Kriyat Ben Yotzeh. Yeah, but there's an easy solution. The halacha is you have to tell your friend to remind you, okay? Then you can eat. Yours truly, this is the first shaila, it brings tears to my eyes, the first shaila I've asked the Rav. I don't know where I got the chutzpah. I called his mother's home. I was a high school kid. And I actually thought I would get Rav Baron Soloveitchik, who I sort of knew from the area. Rav Baron, we go. So I get the Rav. The Rav answers. Rav, and so I asked the Rav the following shaila. I said, Rabbi Soloveitchik, I'm I'm in the high school, I think it was second, third year, and I come home at night, and my mother sees how tired I am, she insists that I eat before I daven. Can I leave myself a note that says Marif? To be yotzei the halach of telling your friend. So the Rav said, as long as you remember to look at the note, it's not a problem, okay? So I want to paskim la halacha. If you have a problem with the kiddush before, all you have to do is in my house when I daven early, I leave a sitter on the table. That sitter's to remind me. And Paka, Friday night, I totally forgot I have to say Kriyat Shema, but it's the first time. Then when I got home, I see the sitter. Baruch Hashem, an easy solution. You don't have to make the announcements. Or if you do make the announcements from Torah tidbits, I wouldn't have a speaker. Understand? Friday night, you're davening early. You're davening early. Okay. Now, I just, a short speaker, but it's impossible because speakers, you have to understand, I'm fortunate. I have a plan. Sunday, Monday, I can play during Velt, I can talk, I can yell, I can shout, I can make a fool out of myself, a tzaddik out of myself. That's why whenever anyone asks me to speak, number one, I don't have energy to go beyond the call. But number two, there's so many retired rabbanim here. It's a chesed. Let them speak. Give them an outlet. You don't know what I went through in this very building. I'm going back before, Charlie, before you were born. There was a Rebbe here with me, Hananya Berzon. Do you know the Berzon brothers? Very capable. Azi is a shame dava. So Hananya taught with me. He was a year or two behind me in college. You remember him in college? So his father was Rabbi Beryl Berzon. Beryl Berzon, when he dashened, the Rav would be listening like this. You understand? He was a dashen par excellence. No, his father retires, comes on Aliyah, and in this very building, he grabs me and he shakes me and he says, Harav Rotkoff, you don't know what I'm going through here. When I davened in Brooklyn in my shul, 500 pairs of eyes were upon me. When I got up to speak, 500 pairs. He says, here no one looks at me. What he was suffering, that Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, I told Rabbi Horowitz, you must be Mechaber, because I had a chazaka, Yom Kippur night, I always would give a talk, baseball and Yom Kippur. That was my chazaka. I could spend the rest of the 2 hours now telling you, but I can't, because we have to finish early on time today, because it's a whole change today. They're baking matzah, so Rabbi Bednach's shir is early today. So I was machaven the New York Times when DiMaggio said either was quoting me or Shnei Neviim mitmabdim b'signon echad, my talk on Don Gianfrido and what that teaches us and how you apply it to Torah. Unbelievable. But I told Whitey Horowitz, Rabbi Meisher Horowitz, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, you must be b'chabit Rabbi Beryl Berzon to give the main talk on Yom Kippur, because his ego needs it, he's suffering. You should know, within the year he left Israel, went back to Florida, and became a rabbi of one of these communities where there are a lot of senior citizens. So, but that's to handle that. Now, let's go a step further. I regret that Alex is not here, but he'll pick it up on tape. If you recall, I believe it was in this class, I don't know, Sunday, Monday, Alex gave me a whole argument that there are more kids who lead the path from the Tzioni Dati world than the Haredi world. So wherever I went, subsequent to Tuesday, once it went up online, wherever I went, people were furious with me for allowing him to speak. I'm a Rebbe, if Talmud wants to speak, let him speak. Oh, what went on? So I'm just going to tell you, number one, everyone said, show us the survey. Number two, every survey, you know, when the Marach does a survey, they have 61 seats. When the Likud does a survey, they have 61 seats. So whenever you do a survey, you know, depending upon the way you ask the question, it doesn't tell you anything, as we know from the American elections and the last Israeli elections. But it's not only that. So I chose one response, Adam Kurevitz Alatzmo. This is my nephew. I have a wonderful brother living here. Some of you know of my brother, world famous in his field, Dr. Levi Rothkopf. And he raised a fabulous family. Baruch Hashem, we have nothing to be ashamed of. I have another brother in America, but my brother living here. So this is his son, Dr. Zev Rothkopf. You may recognize the name. He's a very well-known dentist. He's considered a dentist. Good morning. I heard part of this shiur from yesterday. Alex says that the Haredim have less dropouts than religious Zionists? This is hard to determine in any study. The Haredim have many internal dropouts, i.e., they are not committed to Torah, but they wear the garb and play the tune. Now, I want you to know that in the New York Post and the Daily News, you saw the articles on what's going on in Williamsburg. I cannot say it aloud. I don't want to dirty my mouth. I'll tell you, b'didi haviyuvta. Gentlemen, I never make up a story. What I have seen in my life, b'didi haviyuvta. At the age of 38, I was in basic training. I then went into the army. I used to do miluim mefutzalim. Charlie, you did army, so you know you have this for miluim mefutzalim, because the army can't use a lecturer 35 days in a row. So you had to sign a form that you agreed to have it split up over 35 different times, let's say. Of course, I signed the form. So once every 10 days, I was out of Yerushalayim. I didn't teach. I was in Tel Aviv. I go to the old central bus terminal, and from there, I'd walk to my base. It was like going from winter to summer. You understand? This is a small country, but the temperature changes are unbelievable. I'll never forget this as long as I live. I was, you know, naive, a young kid yet. I'm walking the central bus terminal. You came in on a lower level. You walked up two flights, and you were in Tel Aviv. In the middle, walking up the two flights, there's a supplier of magazines. Rebbeinu Shel Olam's al up hitting every type of pornography in the world. And there's a Hasidic Jew, mit abad, mit prayers, with the black, with the gear, and the seller is showing him the latest magazines. I don't want to go further. So it doesn't mean every Hasid does this, chas v'chalila, but my nephew is absolutely right. More importantly, what happens to the dropouts from each group? Are they constructive in society? Do they maintain an ethical way of life? Do they continue mitzvot bein adam l'chaveru? From my experience, a study about that aspect will show interesting results. A Rosh Yeshiva in the United States once said that the way to judge a yeshiva's quality is to see the dropouts. Are they scholars and professionals or money launderers engaged in antisocial behavior? That's from my nephew Zeb. So chas v'chalila, I'm not saying every Haredi is like this. I'm not saying we have more dropouts. Make it a drop lower. We have more dropouts. Oh, fine. They have less dropouts, but let's be realistic. Okay, now let's pick up we have a fabulous shiur, what we're getting involved in. I don't know if I'll reach it all today, but I dug out my memory and life. You will see. Okay. But now coming back to Rav Aaron's hesped, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's hesped for his Rebbe, for Rav Hutna, a magnificent eulogy, what I reconstructed in class. And there are no two ways about it. If one wants to be a good Rebbe, and in the Haredi, I have to tell you that when I walk in Borough Park, my wife is witness to this. You know, she never believes my stories that I gave a good share of this, but she's seen certain things in life, including in Israel. One time an army car stopped. I was walking on Rehov Yafo, and a soldier, I remember the name until today, we're going back 35, 36, 37 years, Avram Kadosh, and he embraced me, hugged me, and my wife said, "How do you know my husband?" He says, "I'm only ashamed of Shabbos because of him. He heard me speak in the army." I said, "Baruch Hashem." So when I walk the streets of Borough Park, people will come over to me and hug me and say to me, I quote, "I went to Teira Vadas, I went to Chatan Sofer. You're the first Rebbe I listened to and I can identify with B'lev Nefesh." And these are people who are living in a different world, but they're honest. So you see, a Rebbe to inspire. This is Rav Hutna, that effervescent personality. This was Rav Hutna. And think back now, look at the Lubavitcher Rebbe. What makes the Lubavitcher Rebbe, look at the impact he had. They just put online, I saw this morning, Arya Liebman sent me a link, the last time the Rebbe gave out dollars. And it's just worth, it's like 5 minutes worth of the Rebbe, the last time, right after that he had his stroke. And the last few years, of course, he was incapacitated, lo aleinu. And you see the Rebbe interacting with each person, with each kid. And he's alive, he's effervescent, he's bubbly. He believes. One time I had a terrible experience, and here's where Alex is right, that a student of mine married to a Gush graduate. And I'm scholar in residence in their community, let it remain nameless. And this was a brilliant girl that I taught, married to a graduate of Alon Shvut. And the guy comes over to me after Shabbos. I couldn't believe what he said to me. He said, "Rav Rakefet, you really believe? I've never met anyone over 30 who still believes." And a year later, he got divorced and ran off with a shiksa. If you hear what I'm saying, she, Baruch Hashem, remarried a medical doctor. Thank God, her life worked out afterwards. But I never forgot. I couldn't tell what I believe. I'm over 30. People don't believe in this rumor. Is anyone here under 30? I don't think so. I hope you daven. I hope. Murray, cut it out. Normie Gold. By the way, we're in close touch, Normie and I. So Baruch Hashem, Chadesh Yameinu Kekedem, it should last a lifetime. So this is Rav Hutna. Now, this hesped on Rav Hutna, I cried to you that Rabbi Yosef Halevi doesn't give us sources. A Talmud listening, Jacob Sasson, and I thank him, and he writes, "I've been very much enjoying your series on Rav Hutna. I want to point out that the audio of the Chesped and Rav Chutna by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik is available on yutorah.org in a few parts. The Chesped begins in the second part of the Shia at around 28 minutes. It's Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, yutorah.org, 792918. It continues on 792919. And Jacob says the emotion and fire with which he speaks is quite remarkable. So you can hear it. You don't have to hear Aaron Rakefet doing it. You can hear the original if you wish. Now, I just want to end off on this connection. I'm quoting now Rabbi Yosef Halevi Soloveitchik. And again, when you think of the computer and what it has done for us and the Torah available, all right, I admit there must be schmutz and pornography and the chveis murder and all types of terrible things on the computer, but that's part of life. It's part of life. You can look at pornography from today to tomorrow. I'll never forget some of you know that Malka and I have a mitzvah that none of you have. I'm boasting. Pardon me for boasting. Pidyon Shvuyim. How many people have a mitzvah Pidyon Shvuyim certified by the Mossad? So when we got the Essas family out, when he came to Israel, everyone jumped on him, but what I wanted to do, he had to do. So I told him I want to take him to Tel Aviv. First time, I arranged with the army. I let the army know I'm bringing in a guest. Not so simple. I used to lecture in the Mate Klali on Tel Aviv, in the heart of North Tel Aviv, the start of North Tel Aviv. Call it what you wish, Rehov Kaplan. It's the Pentagon there, the big, 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 big army base. So I arranged for him to be my guest, to be our guest. And we get to Tel Aviv, and we get to the central bus station, and he sees the pornography, and he's overwhelmed. He couldn't believe it. He's coming from Russia. Russia, Rabbi Yitzchak Kogan used to say in Leningrad that, thank God we have no pornography in Russia. It was forbidden. As a matter of fact, if you wanted to bribe the KGB at point of entry with the meches and all you had to do was have a magazine or two of Playboy, am I right? Playboy was called Penthouse. My memory is not that good on those topics. But a magazine of schmutz, they took it and they didn't look at anything else. You understand? So Rabbi Yitzchak Kogan said, in America you can have schmutz because you have Torah. God created the Yetzer, according to the Gemara. And the Tavlin, the cure for it, is Torah. Here in Russia, we have no Torah, so thank God we have no schmutz. I remember Elie was overwhelmed by what was available, the free world, Tel Aviv, 42nd Street. But ubachata b'chayim. So could you imagine this Hesped is on? But this is beyond the Hesped. And here Yosef writes that when Reb Moshe Soloveitchik passed away, my father started going to law school. I believe he went to NYU. And he received smicha from his cousin, Reb Moshe Feinstein. Reb Moshe, this is 1942, Reb Moshe appointed Reb Aaron to give the shir directly under him at Metifta Tiferet Yerushalayim. Now, and this is where Reb Aaron started teaching. Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, it's interesting, Metifta Tiferet Yerushalayim always remained a smaller institution. It never became one of the major yeshivas. It could simply be that Reb Moshe always remained Yiddish. He couldn't relate that well to the American kid. Now, I'm not saying Reb Moshe was Reb Moshe, but Rav Chutna had the advantage that within 1 year he totally mastered English. When Chaim Berlin opened in 47 and Rav Yitzchak Chutna was building the Metifta and the Beis Medrash past the elementary level, Rav Chutna brought Rav Aaron Soloveitchik to Chaim Berlin And at that time, Chaim Berlin was quite a major institution, and he made him second in command. And when I went to high school, and remember, the world was much smaller, when I went to high school, so we knew everything going on in Teir of Adas and everything going on in Chaim Berlin. We knew the names of the Russia Yeshiva. There was social connections. Sometimes students went back and forth. You could have, why are you guys going to Teir of Adas, as I recall, Chaim Berlin. Shlomo Antelman is an example. Zichrono Levracha, Marvin Antelman, if the name means anything to you. A Bostonian to begin with, very bright. I remember, very handsome, a short guy, blue eyes, blonde hair. And he, after Yeshiva College, he went to Chaim Berlin. That's where he got smicha. There were Chaim Berlin guys coming to YU, Teir of Adas guys coming to YU. So I remember we always knew that in Chaim Berlin, there was Rabbi Hutner, number one, and Baron Soloveitchik, number two. Then you knew Vic Snow's uncle. Rabbi Snow was also a Shem Dover, Rabbi Shurkin. But you knew Rabbi Aaron was number two. Now, Rabbi Aaron, and I'll just end off this beautiful story about him, because it also captures the individuals. At that moment in time, who was the Mashgiach in Yeshiva Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin? Rabbi Avigdor Miller. So there, why you had a direct connection, because Rav Lessin, our Mashgiach, was the father-in-law of Rabbi Avigdor Miller. And I don't have to tell you, Rabbi Avigdor Miller went on to become a Shem Dover. Ultimately, he moves on to his own shul, remains in his shul, Young Israel. It was in East Flatbush.
Rugby
it was called. But that's East Flatbush or adjacent?
It's East Flatbush.
Rugby, Young Israel of Rugby, and he opened up his own little yeshiva, which functions until today. And he gave lectures, and a very interesting individual, very insightful, a lot to say. When it came to Israel, in my humble opinion, he didn't start to understand what was happening here, what was going on here. Some of his lectures are very, very anti-Israel. I remember hearing years ago, he's poking fun at Golda Meir. You know, whenever people do that, I always say to them, you're absolutely right, but it's your fault. And they look at me. I say, you should be living in Israel. You get a vote. You have a say. The country reflects. It's a democracy. It's fabulous that it's. If this place would not be a democracy, there would be a tyrannical left-wing dictatorship perpetuated by the original Marach. But because it's a democracy, you see what's going on. The Avoda Lichtendred, and take a look, the Likud, Lapid, look at the way Lapid talks, both sides of his mouth, not to offend the right wing. Yes, it's a democracy. Okay, so don't complain about Israel. Come and make it better. But Rabbi Avigdor Miller went on to become a Shem Dover, as we all know. So he was then the Mashgiach in Chaim Berlin. And here, I'm reading Rabbi Yosef's paragraph. Harav Aaron's hasmadah and total immersion in learning was legendary. He used to learn on the subway on his way to Chaim Berlin, and frequently he missed a stop. His students, if they would see him on the subway, other kids come to Chaim Berlin, they would sit next to him to remind him where to get off. One time there were no students, and he went on to the last stop. Conductor set everyone out, got out, knew he had to go back, got involved in learning, missed the stop again. Again he came back, finally reaches the yeshiva, and Rabbi Avigdor Miller, you know, the Mashgiach, has to keep order, Seder, and he asks him, was is getroffen? What happened? Why weren't you here on time? And poor Rabbi Aaron had to give him the whole story that I guess Rabbi Avigdor Miller listened with one ear. Can you really believe it? He was so immersed in the Shita Mekubetzet, he got off at the wrong stop, and then he came back, or he didn't get off at the right stop, and then he missed the stop again, and that was Rabbi Aaron, that was Chaim Berlin, that was Rabbi Avigdor Miller. Yes, Rabbi Aaron later in life moves on to Yeshiva University. My own feeling is, and here I can't be objective because I was living it, I was already on the YU faculty, I knew Reb Aaron intimately, I knew the Rav intimately. Sam Dershowitz told me this morning, some dummy asked him the other day, I hope that dummy's not listening, I don't know who it is, I'm not embarrassing him, but he said to him, were you a friend of Rabbi Soloveitchik? Tell me, were you a friend? Could you imagine someone's going to ask you, Yitzchak, were you a friend of Rabbi Soloveitchik? No, friend, we were Talmidim, we lived in awe. I mean, Sam, we lived in awe of the Rav. Every word, we were like chassidim, right or wrong, every word was holy to us. We were friends, of course we were friends, but it's not that you would say in terms of a friend like us. My friend Seth Sackett, I wouldn't say I'm the Dorav, all right, Baruch Hashem. So my own feeling is that by the mid-60s, and we will come back to this in different language much later, but my own feeling is that by the mid-60s, early 60s, the anti-Rabbi Yosef B. Soloveitchik feeling in the other yeshiva, as the right wing built up, the Rav remained a difficult pill for them to swallow because the Rav was not in the right-wing world. And yet you couldn't say about the Rav that as an Amoritz, as a Kaldat, the Rav was a Tzadik Yisod Olam and a Lamdan, the greatest Lamdan in the world from yeshiva learning, okay? That point of view, it could be Shaul Lieben was a bigger Bucky and scientific scholarship, could be Reb Moshe was a greater Posek. But as a Rosh Yeshiva, who came near the Rav? Everyone admitted it. So there was that anti-Rabbi J.B. Soloveitchik feeling, underlying the words J.B. I don't want to spell it out, but I can't speak about that. It hurts. So Reb Aaron, I believe, started to feel uncomfortable. And then when the Rav took ill, the Rav asked him to come to YU and give his shiur. Once he started giving the shiur in YU, we're talking about 1959, 1960, when the Rav returned, Rabbi Belkin already asked Reb Aaron to remain. And this was Rabbi Belkin always looking out to improve the yeshiva faculty. And you know that at one point he reached out to Rav Shach of Panovich, asking him to come to YU a year, 2 years. Ad kedei kach, Rabbi Belkin was reaching out to bring in Litvishet Talmidei Chachamim. And he was very happy to have Reb Aaron Soloveitchik. Then, of course, I can't go into more detail or take me hours, but Chicago was shaking.
We covered all this.
No, I just want to say one word. Chicago was shaking. They had machleket there, and they brought Reb Aaron to Chicago. And Reb Aaron, I imagine his feeling was to leave the yeshiva, go to Chicago. He would be his own man. He could build his own institution. And he went to Chicago, and there's a lot more to say. It was a fortunate, unfortunate decision, but we'll leave that for another time. Now, coming back to Reb Chaim Berlin and coming back to Rav Hutna, I want to show you an amazing source and say a few words about his work. We mentioned the Professor William Helmreich before, but now we've come to him a little bit more in detail. Willy Helmreich, I believe he was second generation, or he himself was a survivor. He was raised in a semi-Haredi world, Brooklyn, went to Kamenetz High School, I think it was called Be'er Shmuel. If anyone here from Brooklyn, you can correct me if I'm wrong. And later, I knew him from Yeshiva College. If I'm not mistaken, he was slightly ahead of me in Yeshiva College. And out of that class in Kamenetz, two individuals went on to become outstanding sociologists. One of them is Meir, who writes about Satmar, and the other one is Helmreich. Now, Helmreich, after he had his doctorate, did very fascinating research The World of the Yeshiva. It's a classic volume. Is it contemporary? No. Like everything else in life, life moves on. And, you know, what was in this building, BMT, is long since gone. The Kollel has shifted colors and gears a few times over. Life moves on. But in the mid-80s, this work that he did, a sociological study of the yeshiva, was outstanding. And it literally is an honest portrait. Helmreich, H-E-L-M-R-E-I-C-H. Willie Helmreich, William B. Helmreich. Not only that, Helmreich, because he had both Haredi education and YU education, he was very balanced. He was not prejudiced. More than that, he took off time, and in order to do this sociological study properly, he learned in, I can tell you in the book, they don't give the exact name, they give a different name, but he learned in Ne'er Yisrael. He took off time to spend many months in Ne'er Yisrael to get a feeling of what was going on. Now, Ne'er Yisrael itself, as we have here two people who have Baltimore connections. I don't know if anyone here has Baltimore, but Morty and Charlie both have Baltimore connections. Ne'er Yisrael is caught in the middle of the yeshiva world in America. It's not YU, but it's also not Lakewood. The Rosh Yeshiva of Ne'er Yisrael, Rabbi Ruderman's son-in-law who succeeded him, Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, was never asked to become a member of the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah because he had a bachelor's, I believe he had a master's, but worse than that, he encouraged students to go on to get a profession and get a degree. Ne'er Yisrael has a working arrangement with universities in the area where you get credit for your theological studies, and you go on to get a degree. So Ne'er Yisrael was a perfect yeshiva caught between both worlds, and he really picked up all the thinking, the atmosphere, the syndromes in the yeshiva world. I want to say something I've never ever said before, and if anyone's listening and can tell this to Willie Helmreich, I'm going to reveal something now. Some of you know that I developed, Minashamayim, we developed a very close relationship, yours truly, and Reb Moshe Scherer, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the man who built Agudat Yisrael. That relationship begins with Russian Jewry. It's a story unto itself. I've alluded to it before, but we developed a very close relationship. I remember Reb Moshe saying to me when Willy Helmreich's book came out, he said to me, I'm very, very much in debt to Professor Helmreich. He's a YU person, and I owe him a tremendous vote of thanks. I said, Moshe, what are you talking about? So he told me, in the research, you know, in the yeshiva world, there is and has always been a problem of homosexuality. It may be a natural result of having only boys. You don't have any girls, it's not, there's always a machloket, which is a better environment. I don't have to tell you, we all have to live in this world and we all have to deal with these problems. At my own point of view, I always felt like the Rav and like Rav Shimshufol Hirsch, very important to have separate classes. You cannot teach a Masechet Ketuvah, Matzah Petach Patuach, to a mixed class of boys and girls. At least any normal Rosh Yeshiva can't, that, myself included. But on the other hand, it's good that boys and girls should meet. B'nai Akiva played a perfect role. Rav Hirsch was makpid to have the boys and girls school on the same campus, the reason being they should socialize going and coming. They should know how to relate a boy to a girl to a boy. Very, very important. And Reb Moshe Scherer told me that Helmreich totally left out the problem of homosexuality. He deals with every other problem in the yeshiva world. But that he left out because he didn't want the New York Times to pick up on this problem. There's a lot more good, positive to the yeshiva world. We don't have to pick up on this problem.
Okay, so with that being said, I strongly recommend if the book is available, if the book is online, it is worth reading. It is a good photograph of the yeshiva world, approximately 1980, that era. Beginning on page 34, he describes Rav Hutner. He's describing Chaim Berlin. Everything I told you was here, but then, from the start, Rabbi Hutner established an extremely close relationship with his students. Note how this certifies with what Rabbaron Soloveitchik said. Most of his students were American-born or raised, and often their exposure to him was their first contact with a European trained scholar of high stature. According to a number of students from those days, Rabbi Hutner had a flair for the dramatic. The following comments were typical of this view. And now he's citing, it's a sociological study, he's citing students. Think back to when I quoted from Rabbi Teitz's description, his daughter. Remember the book on Rabbi Teitz? Think back to that description. Here's the student now. I came to the yeshiva, a young fella from out of town. And I still remember from a quarter of a century ago what it was like to hear a Mrs. Shmuis from him. We met in a room in the yeshiva. It was very crowded, about 50, 60 guys in the room. And a path would be made for him. But it was so narrow, it took a miracle on the order of the splitting of the Red Sea to make room for him. A student who attended in the early 1940s described their weekly Musa talk with Rabbi Hutner. Quote, we would go in the late afternoon, and then, as darkness fell over the room, he would emerge from another room, looking like he had just been in a holy place. And he would sit down, his eyes covered by his hands, never seeming to look at anyone, speaking slowly, dramatically. Wow. You know who this is a description of? Reb Natan Zvi Finkel, the author of Slabodka. What Rivka Blau quotes her father, I have other sources. Absolutely. Absolutely. And these students became very close to him. You see, this is not YU now. YU, one of the big complaints the students had, if we could ever bring up the guts to say it to the Rav, Rebbe, we don't see you. You come in on Tuesday, you give shiur. You give shiur Wednesday. You're gone. You're back in Boston. I remember the Rebbe, we once had the guts. Yitzchak is shaking his head in approval. Baruch Hashem, I'm telling it as it was. We once had the guts. Rebbe, Fabrenya Shabbos mituns. And I'll quote the Rav to you what he said to us. He said, what's been a chassidish Rebbe? Medach minom kukin v'nichtafen? What am I? Do you know Yiddish, Gabby?
Yes, he's a chassidish
Rav. What am I, a chassidish Rebbe? You have to look at me when I daven? Medach minom kukin v'nichtafen? You understand? Oh, wow. We once got the Rav to spend the Shabbos with us. You don't know what that Shabbos was like. In Boston, I guess he was a private citizen. It was a different Rav, a different Kehillah, a different... But hundreds of kids walked across the Washington Bridge, not the George, the Washington from the Bronx. Remember, the Bronx was connected to Washington Heights by the Washington Bridge. I lived there. I walked there. I know what I'm telling you. Hundreds of kids walked. Oh, we looked at the Rav, gave a shmuas. Of course, it wasn't so much we looked at him when he davened. We wanted his Torah, we wanted a talk, we wanted his insight.
Oh, what a Shabbos. That was the Shabbos that I always tell the story afterwards with the Havdalah. Remember the story? That Reis was the Gabbai of the Minyan. I made his shidduch, you should know. Rav Lesson came over to me. I'm living it. Let me say it in English. I don't have to repeat myself, but I'm living it. Rav the Mashgiach says, Kum aroysich, daf haich bet nefes. Come outside to the hallway, outside the Beis Medrash. I want to ask you, request something. He said, ich kuk fa shidduch, and he tells me a girl's father, Beis Yaakov girl, and he, father came to him, Efshir Zdar Barkan Yeshiva for my tachta. Maybe this is in the, for my daughter. I recommended Reis. They're still happily married until today, you should know. Over 60 years. Kanan Hara. They should live and be well. So, you understand? That Saturday night, Reis says to the Rav, hundreds of kids are there. Rebbe, Zaitun's Machabed, Machavdala, be Machabed us, make Havdala. So the Rav, all right, you know, the Rav. And suddenly, as the Rav is ready to begin, 300 kids sit down. Remember the story? And the Rav says to us, Vet Achmed Galasai, who told you the secret? You have to sit for Avdala. And we said, Rebbe, you just gave a yahrzeit shiur 4.5 hours and developed the idea you have to sit. The Rav couldn't believe people listened to him. You understand, this was the Rav's mentality. He's not a Chassidic Rebbe, Chassidic Rebbe. The Lubavitcher said something? No, 10,000 people have to follow immediately. The Rav, you understand? He was a Rosh Hashiva. He didn't realize, Yitzchak, do you understand this stuff? He didn't realize his own influence, his own importance. He was just a humble little person doing what he could do, say a Hashir. He opened the door, he answered the door in his house, he answered the telephone. There was no shtick about him. Underline the word shtick. Could you picture the Lubavitcher Rebbe sitting in his office and there's a knock? Immediately his secretary jumps up to open the door. The Sakhmurov sitting there immediately, Ashkenazi opened the door. It's a different feeling. But Chaim Berlin was totally centered around Rebbe Yitzchak Chutner. Those who attended the yeshiva, Helmreich writes, even if they did not become part of the inner circle that quickly sprang up around him, felt his interest and concern for their welfare in many ways. And here he quotes another student. Quote, my roommate had recently become engaged. I asked him, did you tell the Rosh Yeshiva? And he looked at me shocked and said, why don't you ask me if I told my father? What do you think? Of course I told the Rosh Yeshiva. Nuch, in YU, kids became engaged. You told the Rav you became engaged? Could you imagine? What are we talking about here? But you see, this was Rav Chutner. This is Rosh Yeshiva.
Rav David Lifshitz.
Rav David Lifshitz had a different personality.
You're describing fits him.
Right. Rav David had a personality already. When he shook your hand with both hands, you felt the warmth. When I came in Aliyah, Erev Yom Kippur, who do I get a call from? Rav David Lifshitz. Eich zeholeich etzlecha. He spoke perfect Hebrew, modern Hebrew, and the love, the feeling, that was Reb David. But you see, Chaim Berlin totally centered upon Reb Yitzchak Chutner. When we went over to his house in Purim, each person got shalach manet, and he addressed you by your first name. This is also to know everyone's first name. I can tell you in my time there were 35 kids in the shiur with the Rav. If 35. When we began the first college shiur, 57, I write about it in Washington, you get the whole background there. We were maybe 25 kids. All right, the Rav knew our first names. By the 1960s, late 1970s, 125 kids in the room. Who could know the names? When I visited the Rav and I walked into Shir in 1983, the last time I saw him alive, and I made an appointment, we spoke afterwards in his apartment, Halacha Lamaisa, many interesting questions. I saw like two types of students in front of him. Those who were up close and listening and participating, and another 100 sitting there just so they can tell their girlfriends, I'm a Talmud of the Rav. You follow? But Rav Hutna, wow, they felt close, and first name, overwhelmed. Another individual says it very interestingly. I think that it had a very important and positive effect on the fellows. Though I did not belong to the in-group, I went to college, and while permitted, those who went to college were down upon. With some exceptions, the top lamdanim, the top fellows, didn't go. The strength of Rav Hutna's personality, my feet trembled whenever I spoke to him. His personality drew us all in. It enabled you to resist your more modern parents who wanted you to go out to college. He built up your ego and made you feel that you were great. This is Chaim Berlin. This is the atmosphere. This is Rav Hutna. And here Willy Helmreich quotes something that I long since forgot, and how accurate he was. My dear students, you can go to YU at that time. You could go to Torah Vidas. You could go to Lakewood. Lakewood was much smaller than it is today, but it was on the map. But still, Chaim Berlin was unique. Morty, got to wake him up. He's fasting today. He has Yahrzeit. He should be a chassid, not a litvak, but what can we do? Charlie, you go to Chaim Berlin, they used to call it, I'm quoting, and he's absolutely accurate, Chaim Berlin shtick. This was the word they used. How do you translate shtick into English? No, I don't know, how would you say it? Chaim Berlin nonsense? No, it's too sharp. Shtick, Chaim Berlin shtick. I think the New York Times would have the word. Yeah, how would you say?
Attitude, maybe.
Chaim Berlin behavior, attitude, aptitude. I think the New York Times will have to stick to the word, shtick. Okay? That, very insightful. All right, we'll come back. We're not finished with Willy Helmreich, but I want to come to the high point of today's show. Behavior quirks. But shtick says it all. And what can you do? Their words, the New York Times uses chutzpah, so they can use the word shtick. Something else about Rav Hutna, you see, and I'll put this all together at the very end. Either my lectures on Rav Hutna are fabulous or I'm an idiot. At the very end, you'll see when I put it all together. You can walk away with either feeling. I won't be offended, take my word for it. But there was something else about, see, he still couldn't totally fit in to the mold. Here he is, we're talking already 1960, Rosh Yeshiva, Chassidic Rebbe, caught in the middle, Zionist, anti-Zionist. He walked his own path. And here you come to the Otsgrowth syndrome. My first two volumes, Revel and Silver, which have both gone through four editions, what's so unique about them? Wherever I go, people from the Haredi world grab me and tell me, oh, we love your volumes, I love your volumes. Well, I say that, all right, I did some research, I admit. I don't have any mistakes. No one has yet called me to order for a mistake, not in Revel, not in Silver. But what's unique? The volumes are honest. I portray human beings. You take Reb Lazer Silva, who after all was more in the Haredi world, although it's hard to say he was Haredi, but he certainly grew up in East Europe, came to America, became a tremendous Talmud Chacham, was the spirit behind the Agudat HaRabbanim, the Union of Orthodox Rabbis, as we will see in detail, Be'ezrat Hashem. But they're honest. People don't become great overnight, and no one has a perfect life. If anyone here has a perfect life, you're not allowed to daven. The Rav used to say time and again, what's the matir for a little guy like us to go before the Rebbeinu Shemur and ten of a kavoteinu and then the atakoneinu liyodam da'at hashiveinu and make all these requests. Who the heck are we? The Rav used to say, the matter is mimamakim karaticha Hashem, that none of us, we're all living in dire straits. Morty today is thinking about it's your father's yahrzeit. Imagine if you could talk with your father, if you could show your father what became of you, your children, your grandchildren. I would love, I always say to my brother, I wish we could show our great-grandparents what became of their family in the United States. Just think for a minute. Leave alone. What about ill health? The Rav used to say, I quote the Rav, I have to quote myself, there is to say, I can shake my finger right now. I don't know what will be in 2 minutes. No, just think what the Rav was saying. Here, there was a person, a professor of Jewish history. Some of you may know him, Eliot Horowitz, Professor Eliot Horowitz. He went to sleep Friday night, 2 weeks ago, the Friday night before last, and didn't wake up. Early 60s. Human being, God have mercy on us. Love, wife, husband, child. Forget about parents already. That's Daka Shalolam. This gives us the right to pray. Anyone who has a perfect life, you're not allowed to pray. How can you go near God? What's the matir? But no human being, that's built in. When you read the art scroll biographies, oh, you get the feeling. These gedolim were born with their kippot on. No, Alvin. Alan, were you born with your kippah on? Dove, were you born with your kippah on? You come from fine, good families. None of us were born with our kippah on. Remember, I told you, you'd love the old mashgiach from Meir Sharim, when he used to give the people hell. What could he... Shom Shabbos, Kashrut, Tarot, what are you going to bawl them out? When you sleep at night, you turn over and your kippah, the yarmulke falt, arunter vom Kopf, falls off. Understand? What I'm about to quote from Rabbi Hutner may be the most famous letter he ever wrote. It is quoted and requoted in many circles, not all circles. It is a fabulous letter. I'm quoting to you now from Pachad Yitzrak, Igrot Uktavim, the volume with his letters. It is letter Kuf Chaf Chet. To make it easier, you can find it on page 217. And beautiful Hebrew. The letter was written in 1963. This is Rav Hutner at his prime. At his absolute prime. And he doesn't tell you who he's writing it to. Beautiful. Ahuvi Chavivi, Shalom Uvracha. My dear one, my beloved one, Shalom Uvracha. And evidently we don't have the letter of the student writing to him. But the student was writing, I'm trying to be a Talmud Chacham. I'm trying to daven with Kavana. I'm trying to be nice to everyone. I'm trying to be an Ohev Yisrael, and I fail. Can't keep my Sidrei Limud. I can't daven with proper Kavana. I'm always having failures. I succeed, I fail, I succeed, I fail. And the Talmud is very depressed. And Rav Hutner writes to him, your letter tells me you will be a great success story. And I'm now paraphrasing the most important part of the letter.
he says, everyone talks about Gedolei Yisrael. Everyone talks about the Chafetz Chaim. Everyone talks about how the Chafetz Chaim never spoke Lashon Hara and what a tzaddik he was. But this is not the real Chafetz Chaim. They should tell you about the Chafetz Chaim's struggles. How did he become a tzaddik? How did he achieve the ability not to speak Lashon Hara? Abol mi yodeya min kol ha-milchamot, ha-mavakim, ha-michshalim, ha-nefilot, ha-neshigot, la-achor, shematza ha-chafetz chayim, v'derech ha-milchama shelo, im yitzro hara. Wow. And he describes here a beautiful poetic Hebrew. A young person has desires, a young person has endless problems. And you're going to fail. And if you won't fail occasionally, you will never succeed. Failure is part of success. And he tells this young man, I wish the books you read and the atmosphere in which you grew up, they would stress the struggles of Gedolei Yisrael and not give you the final, finished, polished, he uses the word polished, meshuchachim, translates as polished, mashuach, the polished, final figure. And I have to tell you, this letter is magnificent. And he says, now you've written me about your yiridot, your nefilot, your michshalim. And I say to you, all these problems are not just tov, tov miyod. And he quotes the Midrash, Vayashem akol asher yasa v'inei tov miyod. Tov is the yetzer tov. Tov miyod is the yetzer hara that you have to overcome. That challenges you. It's the Meridik Medrash. It's dealing with the sexual desire. That all the other desires are good, but the sexual desire is very good. With all the problems it engenders, because if not for that desire, the Medrash continues. We would not marry, we would not build a house, we would not go to work, we would not have children. Very powerful thinking. Behishtatvut b'siv lecha, I join in your struggle. V'bitachon b'nitzkoncha, I am confident you will win. B'tfila lahatzlatcha, Yitzchak Chutna. What do you say about that? For the Chutna, a letter, insight, Talmud-Rebbe relationship. In Loshen Afalti, Shivlokanti. Quoting a pasuk from Nach. Wow. Yes, Chaim Berlin shtick, like the Alta, dark, clearer path, but a very devoted, dedicated Rebbe Rashi Shiva. You compare him to the Rav, it's two different worlds. The Rav, different personality. Very, if at all, any shtick whatsoever.
I hate to say it, but the Rav was like a professor of Talmud.
It wasn't exactly a professor of Talmud because he's...
talk about Rebbe, Rebbe. He wasn't their Rebbe.
Please.
I mean, he was their teacher.
Please, no. He was my Rebbe. But you had to seek him out to draw out of him. If you went down to Maria, you said it yesterday in class... the end of the Shir Maria every week, Hashkafa.
Well, in Boston, Agata. This is the way he was.
Boston, Saturday night.
Not in New York, he wasn't.
Not in the classroom. The classroom, he was there to teach. All right. But the personalities were different. Rabbi Hutner, Rabbi Yitzchak, remember what I quoted to you weeks ago, months ago already, where this Talmud calls him after not having spoken to him for
many, many years. And the Talmud calls him, and Rafutna recognizes the voice that hadn't spoken in 20 years. Hi, Yitzchak. How are you? And what are you doing in New York? I came to get my kids home from camp. What camp did they go to? Summer camp? And the guy says, Machni Yisrael, the Chabad camp. And Rafutna washes the floor with him. This is what you called to tell me after we don't speak to each other for only 20 years? You send your kid to a Chabad camp? Before you know it, they'll be home saying Mashiach. See, the Rav, and then this may be because it lacked that, he wasn't upset. Whatever you did, there was freedom of choice. You understand? You could tell Rebbe, I'm a Chabadnik. Beautiful. You could tell Rebbe, I'm an Agudist. Beautiful. You could tell Rebbe, I'm a Mizrachist, a B'nai Akivinik. All right, that was his home. Beautiful. But it wasn't like Rav Chutna who felt the student had to reflect him all the way to a certain degree. The Rav's attitude was, Eggman can learn him, you know how to learn? Fine, I'm happy with you. Everything else was secondary. It's fascinating. Different gestalt. Now, people did say about the Rav, I think Yitzchak will remember this, people did say about the Rav that the reason he had this broader attitude, I would call it, is that he never learned in a yeshiva. Gabi, once again, you have to leave now, Gesundheit. Hate. Regards to your parents and regards to my cousin who works with you today, okay? They're very, very special people. And I'm sure you are too. Tiskel alot mala mala. His father was my student before you were born, though. His father comes to Israel in his early 70s, and he cuts class to attend the rally of my madrich, Meir Kahana. So then I let him have it. I say, we got to serve in the army. We put our lives on the line. I rally for Meir Kahana. I have a right to. You're an American kid. Who the heck are you? You come and you're going to go back to America? I said, I'm giving you a zero for today. I never gave grades, but I wrote down a zero. I said, the only way you get the zero back off is if you come in Aliyah and call me the day you come in Aliyah. No, another 7-8 years went by. Seth Sackett calls me. Rebbe, take off the zero. I've just arrived on Aliyah. That's Gabi, his son. You know the name Seth Sackett. It's in the news. They've got a new party now. He's leave it for another time.
Sackett works with Fakeland.
He works with Franklin, yeah, that's exactly it.
And the funniest part of all is anybody who knows Westerns, Mooley the War, were a whole series about the Sackett family.
Okay,
not
so.
Not
for that, okay, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. But you see, they used to say about the Rav that the reason he was so liberal and so different and not controlling is he never learned in the yeshiva. Follow? You'll see when we talk about Slabodka, we talk about Mir, you talk about Tells, you talk about Volozhin, there certainly was an attempt to inspire the student to go a certain way. Mir, Rabbi Yeruchim Levavitz, Slabodka, the Alta, then Rabbi Avram Grzynski, Rabbi Cheskel Levenstein, who are we talking about here? Tells, Gedolei, Gedolei Yisrael, that tells the Derech, Geben mit Gaiva, Shminesh Abishminesh. The Rav had none of that. He learned by his father. No, you learn with your father, it's a different experience. So that can explain why the Rav was so broad. He only cared. I can tell you a story of a certain individual who today is an Av Beit Din, a big Talmud Chacham, Misadeh Gittin. His father was a graduate of Skokie, was a member of the RCA, and his son was learning, I believe, in Lakewood. And I remember it vividly. He brought the son to meet the Rav. This is not a YU guy. He's not going to college. He's not getting a PhD. And the Rav spoke with him in learning. And the Rav said to the father, Afaganigin reden mit Ayazun, Eken lernen. A pleasure to speak with your son. He knows how to learn. You understand? All barriers. I don't know if Rabbi Huttner would be so happy to speak with him. He knows how to learn. He has a PhD in Jewish history. You understand what I'm saying? It could be this was a good explanation. I don't know. But it's a theory, and that's what circulated in the yeshiva world at my time, certainly in the YU world. And with all these complaints against the Rav, why he doesn't spend Shabbos with us, why we can't see him more often, why we can't shmuis, I have to admit that we did score a big victory with the Rav that changed my entire life. Do you remember? We pleaded with the Rav, Rebbe, we don't just want to hear a shir. We have questions to ask you. We want hashkafa, we want guidance. And finally, it's 59 and I believe 60. I have everything written down word by word. The Rav gave in, and twice we met with him in Klein Hall. You remember, I think it's called Reed's Hall today. There was a fireplace there. There was a picture of Yitzchak Chanan, and it was like a place, a lounge. I don't know what it is today. Like a lounge around the side of the building where the dormitory was. The big, big, big building. And we shot endless questions at the Rav. And then the second time, Matty Weissenberg, Zichrono Levracha, presented a paper and the Rav commented on it. And it was all dealing with hashkafah, halacha lema'aseh. The questions that bothered us, secular education, Mizrahi, Israel, all these questions, the question of what we're going to come to next week when we meet again, when it's going to cost $99,000 linked to the shekel to get into class, no two ways about it. We're going to deal with synagogue council, Rav Huttner, what happened in the mid-60s, Rav Shmuel Belkin, that I reconstructed my what I went through at that time. Brought out all the documents. Those were the questions. No, at the end of the second meeting, the Rebbetzin said to us, you boys have no regard for my husband. You don't see that he went through a major operation. You don't see he doesn't have energy. He cannot meet with you again at night. And that was the end. Two meetings, but what two meetings? Particularly the first one, will we shut the questions at him? I'll tell you about Abba Braunschweiger, but leave it for another time. What Abba asked the Rebbe, what the Rebbe answered him.
Is it recorded or transcribed?
Morty, let's put it this way. I did a lot of good in my life. Most of it I can't talk about. We'll leave it at that. 100 years from now, you will say you were proud to have known Aaron Rakefin. 100 years. Let it for that. Yitzchak, that's it. That's it.
You told us you just did.
No.
So you should write it up and send your writing reports.
Please, let it stand. Gentlemen, coming back to Willy Helmreich. One more chapter in Rav Huttner's life. And here you have all the documents, highly organized, and it's the story we've alluded to. The World of the Yeshiva, beginning on page 46. Following World War II, endless immigrants came into America, DPs. William Helmreich may have been one of them. I was together Charlie Rosen, Dr. Rosen, Friday night. I remember him well. He was a DP, a survivor. How did we know? They spoke English with an accent. Everyone, you know, we were, as many of us were American-born already, but many were survivors. Now, the yeshiva, what went on until World War II, every yeshiva, you take Yeshiva University, and the whole yeshiva, maybe there were 300 students, high school, college, smicha. After World War II, every yeshiva had students, Chaim Berlin, Peira Vadas, RJJ, but the three main yeshiva in the New York area were Yeshiva University, which had university status already, 45 on, Peira Vadas, and Chaim Berlin. RJJ was on the east side, was more elementary with a high school. I don't want to have a very big high school. And they took in all the emigres, all the survivors, they took in for nothing. You should know that if the people could not afford to pay, there was no tuition. Just send the kids to yeshiva. And a lot of fine individuals came out of RJJ at that time. Not all of them are properly from, but they have good feeling. Krautheim, I can give you names, a whole list of people that came out of RJJ at that time. But the real three, those were the two big ones in Brooklyn. Now, for whatever reasons, the Frumkeit neighborhoods developed in Brooklyn. The Bronx had religious Jews, had over a million Jews, had religious Jews, not many, but you cannot say the Bronx became a frum area. The Upper West Side of Manhattan always had religious Jews, but once again, it was religious Jews with Broadway being Broadway. The East Side had nothing. The KJ, when you speak about the most important Orthodox shul outside the State of Israel, when you talk about 46, 47, maybe Shabbos morning, they had 60 people, B'sach HaKol, in Kehillat Jeshurun. 60, 70 people, if that much. But Brooklyn, Williamsburg, Borough Park, wow, Crown Heights, these areas built up. And now you have the tremendous problem. People have to make a living. People need parnasa. A lot of kids gravitated to Yeshiva University. They finished high school, Torah Vadas, they finished Chaim Berlin. A prime example gravitating to Yeshiva University, Abba Braunspiegel. He was a Torah Vadas graduate, gravitated to Yeshiva College. Yitzchak Kalt, Zichrono Levracha, Yitzchak Kalt was a Torah Vadas graduate, came to Yeshiva College, and his Rebbeim in Torah Vadas said about him, I remember it like yesterday, as Zayn of us is gestiegen, he grew in learning in Yeshiva University. And what was the pull of Yeshiva University? A college under one roof with the yeshiva. And anyone who went there, we can say Eidut Nemana, that it was the greatest gift. We didn't have to run. We went from one floor to another floor. Here was a yeshiva, and here was a college. Wonderful experience under one roof. Now, in Brooklyn, this presented a tremendous challenge. And this challenge goes on until today. You're going to have people who are anti-Yeshiva University, and they will tell you very simply, we have nothing against college. People have to make panasa. People have to go to school. People have to have a living. But to have a college and a yeshiva under one roof is making a statement that learning Shas and Paiskim is the same thing like learning biology, chemistry, English literature, mathematics, etc., what have you, art and music. All right? This is a criticism. I don't say I agree, but you have to admit it's a valid point. In Brooklyn, look what was happening. Kids are going to Brooklyn College. Brooklyn College was then filled with yeshiva boys. Today, Coombs College has a very high amount of religious kids, boys and girls. Well, I have three nephews who all graduated. I think one Touro or Lander and the other two Brooklyn College. Not only that, you go to college, boys and girls together. Can everyone handle it? Can they handle it? Not only that, you're going to have teachers, big upikarsim, spitting out upikurses at you. Which, by the way, you had in Yeshiva University on principle that the Rabbi Revel and Rabbi and Mori Urebi, the Rav, who sets the tone until today, did not want to quote. Read the Rakefet, Volume 2, the Rav, where I quote the Rav word by word, his concept of Yeshiva University, why he loves Yeshiva University. And he says, I'm not in favor of a Catholic college. I've spoken about it at great length, it's not for now, but this was the Rav Shita. You have to be exposed to the real world. You have to be prepared for the real world. So in Brooklyn, they came up with the idea, we will organize a college under the auspices of Torah Vadas and Chaim Berlin. And it will be a college that we will control, the teachers will not sprout up because the students will be only males, and it will be a wonderful addendum to the yeshiva program. The two people in favor, the two leading lights, was of course the legendary Mr. Shraga Feivel Mendelovich of Teira Vadas. He insisted on being called Mr., although he was a big Talmud Chacham, and he could certainly paskin a shayla, and he was a Eurasia Mayim, Hungarian, German, 100%. Bucky and Rav Shimshua Phil Hirsch later on picks up Hasidic literature, a tremendous feeling for Jewish philosophy. He was in favor. Rav Yitzchak Chotno was in favor. They were the leading lights. Its board of trustees included Rabbi Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, Yitzchak Chotno, and other prominent scholars and educators. According to the charter program, the school would offer a basic liberal arts program. Credits would be given for their yeshiva studies, but there would be a full complement of secular courses such as psychology, chemistry, mathematics, and so on. The petition was not only for a bachelor's program, but they had three different areas for advanced degrees, master's, and afterwards doctorate. School of Theology, School of Social Studies, School of Administration. The person they got involved, and you had to deal with Albany, you had to deal with the state Board of Education, if that's what it's called in America, that's what it's called here, Misrat HaChinuch, was a Talmud Muvhak of Mr. Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, someone I was yet privileged to know personally when I came in Aliyah, 69. He lived around the corner from me, Rabbi Harold Lyman. Anyone from Queens should recognize the name, because you all know his son, Professor Schnur Lyman. And this Rabbi Harold Lyman, Talmud Muvhak of Mr. Mendelovich, a friend of Sender Gross, was another Talmud Muvhak. These were all Torah Vadas people. Their sons, grandchildren, many of them found their world in Yeshiva University. But these people were learned, but were broad. And they all saw the need for college. He dealt with Albany. And from Albany, they got the charter, they got the okay. By 1947, they could have opened this school and gone ahead. Rabbi Lehman states, "We at Torah Vadas were confronted with the problem of people leaving the yeshiva altogether to go to Brooklyn College. It's just too much time to travel back and forth. There they had teachers who ridiculed religion. Therefore, we wanted to establish a college right in the yeshiva area so the boys would not waste time and be exposed to contemporary philosophies." So Willy Helmreich asked him, how could this have been contemplated when various European rabbinical authorities such as Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman and Rabbi Baruch Ber Leibovich had stated that secular college studies were forbidden? And of course what he's quoting here is what I write about in Bernard Revel, and I've spoken about it. I have other articles on it that appear in Rakafet Aron. When Yeshiva College opened, 1928. A lot of parents in Brooklyn, it's not the Brooklyn of today where every second Jew has a beard and dresses with a uniform and dresses in black. When Yeshiva College opened, the parents were very anxious. Our kids should go to college too. Why don't you open a college? Why don't you follow Rabbi Revel's example? And Mr. Mendelovich wrote to Europe, wrote to
Reb Baruch Ber Leibovich, wrote to Reb Elchanan and asked for guidance. Wrote to Reb Elchanan Wasserman. Because Reb Baruch Ber Leibovich, we know who wrote the letter. It's Rabbi Schwab. Rabbi Schwab wrote the letter. But they wrote to Europe and they got answers. Chas v'chalila to go to college. I can't go into great detail now, but I'll give you one little quote from the tshuva of Reb Baruch Ber and the Birchat Shmuel. You'll find it after Perek Aleph of Kedushin, page 38 to 42, in the Birchat Shmuel on Kedushin. You'll find it right there. It's a long tshuva, fascinating tshuva, but he tells one little story that says it all. World War I, a kid came in to Reb Chaim Briska, and Reb Chaim Isaac Grzynski was standing right there, was visiting Reb Chaim, and he hears the conversation. And the kid says, I got a job in the American consul in Warsaw. If I take the job, I will not be drafted into the Polish army for World War I. But the problem is, if I take the job, I have to answer the telephone on Shabbos and relay messages on Shabbos. Reb Chaim Paskind on the spot, take the job, pikuach nefesh doche Shabbos, it'll save you from the battlefront, World War I. Kid walks out. 20 minutes later, another kid walks in and says, Rebbe, to Reb Chaim, I was just accepted into gymnasium. The Polish army has a guideline. If someone is studying gymnasium, they will not draft him till he graduates. If I go to gymnasium, it'll be at least 5 years till I have to contend with the draft. And Reb Chaim told him, Chas v'chalila, that you should go to gymnasium, better you should be drafted. When the kid walked out, Reb Chaim Moses said to Reb Fashtenish, Pikuach Nefesh? So Reb Chaim said, look, when it comes to Shabbos, Pikuach Nefesh is Doicha. But to go to gymnasium, you'll hear up because it's Aveda Zara. It's one of the three cardinal sins. Pikuach Nefesh is not Doicha. So you see that anti-college university feeling. This is the famous question where Reb Heschel Schachter writes, that the Rav was asked, how could you go against your grandfather? Times are different. People were not happy with Reb Heschel's answer because they felt it's much deeper with the Rav, but this is what Lyman answered when he was asked this question by Willy Helmreich. It was done because we faced a serious problem and we proved it because of the circumstances of the day. Now you should know that Rabbi Shmuel Lyman wrote an entire article in Tradition. It's cited by Willy Helmreich. You'll get the source there. And all the documents are there. This is not a fairy tale. They actually had the charter. Everything was ready. They could begin. One individual mixed it all. And Mr. Mendelovich and Rabbi Huttner would not go against his will. And that was Reb Aaron Cutler. Reb Aaron Cutler said, Yehareg v'al yava, chas v'chalila. And I remember when I learned in Lakewood, they always quoted the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Labriyot always quoted the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that if you mevatel time from Torah, it's the Vah Hashem Bazaar. If you have time to learn, you have to learn. If you work, you're a farmer, whatever your profession is, all right, you can't learn. But to go and study other matters, other chokmat, other scholarship, this is the Vah Hashem Bizah, Ad Kedei Kach. And you all know Reb Aaron was 100% forceful, built Lakewood. One of the reasons he chose Lakewood, there was the closest college to Lakewood within a space 50 miles was an agricultural college. So not too many Jewish boys in Chutz Laretz. In America, in Israel, is a different story. We need people who are experts in agriculture, water, and all that goes with it. Rehovot, the Hebrew University branch, etc., the Technion. But in America,
That's one of the reasons he chose Lakewood. And you have to understand, Rabbaron Cutler, his gestalt, his force, his personality, you could not take him on. The Rav loved Rabbaron Cutler, didn't agree with him at all, but appreciated his learning. When it came to learning, when it, remember the famous Shiloh with Cuba, Yom Kippur, taking out the Jews, how the Rav tells David Weingarten, call me back in 2 hours. Many years later, David meets the Rav at the wedding, and he says to the Rav, Rebbe, why did you tell me to call you back in 2 hours? He said, I wanted to consult with the Kletzka Rosh Yeshiva, with Rabbaron Cutler, you understand? So Rabbaron was a personality. You can agree or disagree, but boy, if you were Rav Yitzchak Kotner, you were Mr. Shraga Feigl Mendelovich, you did not disagree with Rabbaron Cutler. He was Rabbaron.
So how did the Lender College come about?
You're talking many, many years later, and Bernie Lander was so smart, he opened up in Borough Park. You know what it's called in Borough Park? Machon Lepanasa. You don't know that. Am I right or wrong? Who knows? Mark, you don't know. Machon, go to Borough Park. Murray, am I right? Machon Lepanasa. No? Yeah, but you got to know there's something else. Let's be honest. The Hasidic world became very big. And the Hasidic world is very different. They don't allow you to sit in the kollel and learn indefinitely. You learn a year or two after you're married. That's it. Then you're out on your own. You're out in the world. Not everyone has a girl with a PhD. Papa has dough. You understand? Not everyone has a girl like that, a wife like that. If you have a wife like that, you're basically in trouble. Let's be honest. You're subservient to your wife, to our in-laws. Let's be honest. But the Hasidic world is what gave Lander its students. You go to Flatbush, one floor boys, one floor women, one day men, one day women, morning men, night women, whatever. Bernie Lander was a genius. But you're asking a question about the 1980s, the 1990s, and we're talking the 1940s. But what's revealing here is Reb Yitzchak Kotner. His mind, willing, but he couldn't cross Rabbaron. You understand? This was Rabbaron Cutler. And you know yourself, when Rabbaron needed help for Chinuch Atzmai, who helped him out? The famous dinner in 1956. Didn't we speak about it yesterday? The Rav came out. Remember, we spoke about Maria yesterday. So remember what I told you. Why did Rabbaron want the Rav? Because by that time, the Rav had Maria, and Maria was filled with Balabatim, who were, by the standards of those days, multimillionaires, diamond industry. They were all Mizrahiites, but Rabbaron Cutler understood, if the Rav comes out to participate, they'll come out and contribute. What, Teira is Teira, Chinuch Atzmai. And the Rav's talk about Rabbaron, it's been written up many times, it's available, you can hear it on tape. Erwin Amos Bunim, in his volume on his father, writes the talk up word by word. How the Rav speaks of, when I speak Rabbaron, it reminds me of my father, my grandfather, Reb Chaim. And whenever the Rav praised Rabbaron grabbed his sleeve, tried to stop him, so much shvach and so much praise. It was a moment in time. All right, I have my own little shita. I take the best from everyone. You understand? Rabbaron Cutler, you have to. I don't agree. A kid has to go to college, has to have nasa. I don't want to listen. Rabbaron Lakewood has success and has failure. Don't anyone tell me it's all success. Go to the federal penitentiaries and you'll see a number of Lakewood graduates. I can give you names yet. So don't tell me it's total success, but we don't, none of us have the perfect answer. But this is fascinating. This is Rav Hutner. Gentlemen, I wouldn't miss the next year for all the matzah that Israel is exporting all over the world. Because the Israeli matzah, I tasted American matzah, and it is pure wallpaper. I can't get You're going back, right? You're going back. I pity you. You're going to have to eat manischewitz.
Twice as much.
All right, the Seder. I want to tell you what I do here. For the Seder, I buy 2.5 kilo, 5 pounds. Of course, I give it to my daughter. We have children, grandchildren, etc., great-grandchildren. But for the rest of Pesach, I eat the whole wheat matzah they make here. Believe me, it is Tam Gan Eden. And before Pesach, when my house is Pesach Day, and everyone laughs at me, because we don't want to rush, I don't want any tension. Egg matzah. Oh, and you don't appreciate what I'm saying. When I came in Aliyah, there was no egg matzah available here. There was no whole wheat matzah. I remember one year Pesach fell, Erev Pesach, and we had Avlechem Mishnah, and I Reb Moshe's Tshuva, and I had a Talmud, Jackie Margaretin, sent me egg matzah from America. Today, I can send egg matzah to Jackie Margaretin. Baruch Hashem. I taught both Jackie Margaretin and Hirsch Manischewitz. I have a schut, Baruch Hashem. Gentlemen, to reiterate, what have we done today? All right, it was a fascinating shiur, but we're going to hit synagogue council at a later date, not 56, but the mid-60s with Rav Hutner and Professor Belkin. You'll see what you'll see. But leave that after we've digested all the matzah, be mekayim all the mitzvot. I wanted to say a button Pesach, and we're ready. Time flies, and I promised Asaf I would finish early. So what did we do today? We did a little bit more Rav Hutner, the Chaim Berlin shtick. And we compared with the Rav. I have to say our words were not nice at times, Yitzchak. But we're not chassidim, we're talmidim, you understand? We have a right to retain a critical sense. We've also, the college, and again, you saw I have here to give out again, I got another copy of what Elif wrote, if Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein had not left America, if Rabbi Rachman had been elected president of YU, what would have been? All right, if is the biggest word in the dictionary. Could you imagine what would be today if in Brooklyn there would be a major university, which it would be, with endless students, run under the auspices of a joint trusteeship of Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin and Torah V'das? All right, but I think Yitzhak is right, that this vacuum is filled by Touro and Lambda College. Think for a minute what you said. The vacuum was there. Bernie Lander ceased it. Kala kavod. Okay. Ad Khan, we'll pick up where we left off. By the way, no classes from now till after Pesach, but right after Pesach, we pick up Pesach ends, what, on a Monday? Am I right?
Is there a possibility we can work on your conscience that you will print out the two evenings of the role.
I don't have it written out. It's work on my conscience. Maybe I can do something semi-legal. It's a real problem, but let me think about it. I just want to show you what I showed yesterday. I was blown away. This Haggadah just came out a week ago. It's Ayeka. Anyone who wants it, go online. Ayeka.
Go ahead, look it up.
You looked at it?
This is Rabbi Aaron from the Old City. And Pardes is having a book launch.
Right. He taught at Pardes for many years. So he came up with this Haggadah, how you get people involved. Endless questions for children and for parents. And you fill in your answer. See, kids, it's in different colors. What's for kids? What's for parents? Fill in your answer. And you read it at the Seder. So that a kid can work on this before Pesach. Parents, and you personalize your Seder. And it's a traditional Haggadah. I mean, it's 100%. I'm told that Ayeka works all the way from Reform schools, their programs, all the way to Chabad, all the way to Orthodox Chabad. It's purely material to help make the students feel part of the Jewish people. Very beautifully done. I'm very, very impressed. Talking about Chabad, if anyone wishes
Mayanotecha, the latest one. This is put out by Chabad. Fabulous publication. Divrei Torah from the Rebbe on the Haggadah. This Chabadnik asked me for an article. He evidently wants to be publishing something again. It's Chaim Dalfin. So he asked me for an article I published many, many decades ago
on
Rabisa Zalman Meltzer. Let me see, am I right? I xeroxed it, I sent it out to him. So this appears in Rakafet Aron Chelik Aleph. If you have it, you have the article. If you don't have it and you want the article, it's yours for the asking. This seems to be from Breslov, a beautiful magazine, beautiful, beautiful pictures with the feeling of God's magnificent world. It's overwhelming what we can do today in print. This is an article that my grandchildren read. We're out, you know, my family, my wife is an artist, and I have two grandchildren. One graduated with Sala, one is graduating. This is probably one of the greatest artists alive. There she is. Pictures, you got to read the whole story. Born in Israel, studied in London, and has a gallery across the street from the King David Hotel. This is the article, if Reb Aaron Lichtenstein had stayed in America,
I'll see that.
Anyone who wants it. This, Jimmy Breslin, remember Jimmy Breslin, the writer? He just died, Lo Aleinu. Very fascinating article. Goodbye, Jimmy Breslin. Gruff Mensch. Skiven Avil de Jung, but a guy with content, not afraid to say what he believed. This is an article on someone, the Rebbe's guidance, Mr. Naftali Deutsch, a survivor, and how the Rebbe influences him. Again, the Rebbe's insight, overwhelming. How did a Yiddish opera wind up in Cuba of all places? Also unbelievable, and it reveals the new world where everyone is running to Cuba. And finally, what I showed yesterday, if you haven't seen it, worth seeing, Ivanka saying to her dad, I need you to buy my chametz. My dear students, in doing it again in health and
this happiness. This is the rubber teaching where it's Stern College.
That's the Rubber Stern College.